Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Be a very interesting show. I have never done a show on this topic before because, frankly, I've never heard of this word before. And I don't even know how to pronounce it. I hope I've got it right. It's called oikophobia. Do you know what oikophobia is? It's spelled O-I-K-O and then phobia. Well, we all know that phobia means fear. But oikophobia apparently is basically having an inferiority complex about your own culture. And that's what we're seeing today, sadly, in the liberal progressive world where you have self-hating white people of the upper class who think that everything has to go to the minorities just because they're a minority, without looking at personal merit, without looking at whether people should deserve these things. Because if you're just going to flat out judge someone on their minority status, that to me is racism. Shouldn't everyone have equal opportunity? So we're going to be talking about this oikophobia, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, on the show with a very interesting person that is from Sweden. He resides now in the U.S. He's got a PhD, and he's written on this, and it's going to be very interesting. The show is live if you want to call in and ask your questions or make your comments. If you have a comment, you want to agree, disagree, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone numbers are on our homepage at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. We're going to talk about modern-day feminism as well, and Europe and Brexit. Whatever happened with that, the Brexit? Wasn't Great Britain, wasn't the UK supposed to bow out? And where is that going? And what does it mean? And what is our future for the West? All of this coming up on the show today. I'm excited, and I want to say hello to everybody who's listening in from all over the world. Let me bring up our page here. I don't know who you are, but I can see where you're listening from, and it's great to see all of you from all over the United States, Israel, France, Australia, Saudi Arabia, Canada, Mexico, Cyprus. It's great to see all of you here. I'm sure more of you will join us in a little while when you wake up on this beautiful morning here in Israel. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back, everybody.
There was a time you didn't worry about terrorism. It was something that happened in a faraway place or to someone else. But now you want to know. Now you want to understand. Now you're afraid that you might be in the danger zone. You need to listen to Gadi Edelman on The Danger Zone every week, where you will find out the truth about what is going on in the world around you. Gadi Edelman on The Danger Zone, right here on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And sadly, liberals, at least I find, have an inferiority complex, and it is deadly. What is that? Is it from guilt that they feel that they have to hate themselves because perhaps they were brought up in with a silver spoon in their mouth, and therefore they are guilty in some way, and therefore they are they sabotage themselves? We're going to be exploring this topic and other things that are happening right now in the world that are assisting and helping the enemy. And I don't think that they really want to do that, but we're going to find out more about that. Our guest today is Dr. Benedikt Bekele. He's a native of Sweden. He received his education in the United States and abroad. His PhD is in philosophy and classics from the University of Heidelberg, Germany. He later taught those subjects while working as a professor at the American University of Paris. Dr. Beckeld is in the final stage of completing the manuscript of his next book, Oikophobia, Hatred of Home in the Decline of Civilizations. And we do not want to see the West decline as we're seeing. He was a volunteer teacher in Namibia, West South Africa. He lived in a small village there with the Herero tribe in the Kalahari Desert. He has published other books and articles on philosophical and socio-cultural issues, and he has appeared on radio and television as an expert panelist. In addition to writing, Dr. Beckeld, who resides in New York, is a noted expert in ancient Greek and Roman culture. This should be interesting. Oh, and European culture. He vlogs on a variety of topics, which can be found on his YouTube channel under his name, Benedict Beckeld. And we will leave a link on our website to where you can be in touch with him. And I want to welcome you to the show, Dr. Benedict Beckeld.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
It's really good to have you on. So oikophobia, disparagement of one's own culture. I had to look that one up before we did the show because I had never heard that word before. And my question is, why progressives, liberals, etc., especially in the United States, embrace minorities? Or let's even talk about the Muslim immigration, which generally does not want to assimilate or embrace American values in return. Why are they being racist in a way just by a person's background or race? They are already bending over backwards and allowing and excusing for bad behavior, etc., based on this.
Yeah, it's a pretty complex topic, actually, which is why I devote an entire book to it. But yeah, oikophobia, this self-hatred, this hatred of your own culture, of your own society or civilization, is something that tends to happen as a culture is declining. And you said, we don't want to see the West decline, and neither do I. But unfortunately, that's already happening and has been going on now for some time. But essentially, it's a great result of a certain vanity that develops in the later stages of a civilization, especially among the educated elite, because once a society has overcome external enemies and external odds, the sort of natural cruelty or the natural desire for superiority that all human beings share to some extent or other manifests itself in oikophobia. And so one starts to feel superior toward that which is here at home. One starts to consider other elements in one's own society to be the new other, to be the new enemy. And so one shows one's own one's own natural desire for superiority by embracing what used to be the enemy, as it were, in this case, Muslims, as you mentioned, or it could be any other group that has been a traditional enemy of that civilization. And one turns instead against other perceived more inferior elements of one's own civilization. And so it becomes a sort of masochism. The masochism isn't, of course, directed against oneself personally, because one considers oneself to be better by dint of being against one's own culture.
But not everybody falls into that category. I mean, you have liberals and you have people who are more conservative, and the conservatives don't have this inferiority complex, don't self-hate their culture. They're proud of it and they want to bring others up into it to enjoy. So what is it that these people who have oikophobia, is it a sickness? What is it?
Well, it's not a sickness in a clinical sense, of course, but it is a sort of social pathology. And it's true that not everybody succumbs to it. And in fact, the more oikophobia develops in a society, the more there's going to be a sort of anti-oikophobic or more conservative counter reaction. And so those two elements will exist side by side, and often they'll actually make each other worse, because as there's a counter reaction, there's a there's a reaction against the counter-reaction, and so the two sides become more and more entrenched against each other, which one can certainly see in the United States today with the two political camps hating each other more than ever. But it's true, not all liberals succumb to it either. There are some people who are more to the left, but who still certainly appreciate the virtues of Western and of American civilization and see those by and large as good things. But it's something essentially that is become stronger in academic circles and also in the younger circles, people who are just coming out of their teens and who go through a sort of natural stage of rebellion, as young adults generally do, but who sort of get stuck in that sense of rebellion and manifest and express that rebellion not just against their parents, as is traditional, but against their overall culture as a whole.
All right. So let's talk about common sense for a minute, because I would imagine that even the liberals and the progressives deep down inside, they enjoy their society because they stay in it. They don't move away to places like Africa or India or China or et cetera. So they must value the country that they're in and what it values. But at the same time, is it coming from this oikophobia, this self-hatred, is it coming from fear or is it coming from guilt? I just, you know, you can have this oikophobia in so many things, not just with American values and Muslims who don't want to, usually, generally don't want to assimilate, but also I've seen it with things like age. Nancy Pelosi, I remember her saying how, oh, the youth, and she was like hating her peers and just talking about how great the youth was and how we have to listen to the youth. This was all in her during the elections and things like that. The young people, it was like almost like she self-hated her own generation. And I'm thinking there is a value in youth. Youth have energy. They have good things that they want to do. But at the same time, they don't have the wisdom and they don't have the maturity. And why is she kind of like dissing her own peers and her own group that has some experience in this world for all the youth, and we have to listen to the youth?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's also, I mean, some sort of common electioneering. She's trying to obviously get the youth to come out in droves and vote for her. And by distancing oneself from other people who are old, in her case, one appears more young oneself. But that's all. I mean, it's also to some extent what Freud used to call the narcissism of small differences, which is essentially that whatever is close to you, be it in age or culture or whatever, there is a greater need or perceived need to distance oneself from that in order to stand out all the more. And so all of those things feed into oikophobia, or in her case, feeds into a certain antipathy toward her own age group. You sort of dirty your own peers, as it were, and thereby become relatively more cleaner, as it were, by comparison. So,
okay, and so it does it stem from guilt, more from guilt, or more from fear, or from
right.
something else?
Yeah, it was first part of your question. Yeah, it stems more from guilt. I mean, phobia means fear, of course, literally in Greek. But no, it's more a dislike and a sense of guilt. Every civilization, and I mean, this is true of all civilizations, in order to rise and become a great civilization, has to exercise violence and oppression to some extent. That's not to say that always happens, isn't to endorse that, but it is simply a fact of human civilization that every great rise involves a measure of suppression of contrary forces. And so as a civilization has reached its height, it will necessarily have committed some violent deeds against other groups. And that then translates itself into guilt once those other groups or forces have been overcome. And so there's definitely a sense of guilt, yeah, as a civilization starts to decline. And that's been true since ancient times.
Well, let me ask you this. Then why don't the Muslims have this? Why don't the Muslims have oikophobia? I mean, they've
right.
been very violent.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. And that's usually because oikophobia is essentially it's not exclusively a Western phenomenon, but it's basically mainly a Western phenomenon. And that's because in order for oikophobia to develop, at least on a sort of mass level, it requires a very flourishing and democratic and intellectual culture, because those are usually elements of the society that turn against its own civilization. And so if you look at indigenous tribes in Africa, or the Muslim culture for that matter, That's less likely to happen because they don't have that intellectual flourishing culture. They have a more tribal culture, which is less prone to this particular vice. But you can see it in some phases of Muslim civilization. So, I mean, during the so-called golden age of Islam in North Africa and parts of the Middle East in the Middle Ages, you had such a great amount of success, at least when compared to Europe at the time, that there was an intellectual class within the Islamic world that started to take their own religion less seriously and to emphasize a more intellectual view of things, which isn't the same as Okophobia.
Okay, hold it right there. The music is on. We got to go to a break. When we get back, we'll be talking more about this and the deadliness of this psychological disease.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
This is Shai Ben-Tekoa, and each week I'll be webcasting to you from Judea, origin of the word Jew, a people besieged and beleaguered in every generation. Nazi Germany's but a memory, but in its place the world invented the phantom Palestinians as this generation's internationally authorized Jew killers. Tune in for a different slant on life in Israel, Phantom Nation, every Monday.
Right, we're here talking about a word that I had never heard before. It's called oikophobia, hatred of home in the decline of civilizations. That's the book that was written by our guest, Dr. Benedict Beckeld. Oikophobia basically means self-hatred of your culture. And we're talking about this because we see this so much in Western society, especially in the academic world, as Dr. Beckeld was talking about, and how it is deadly to just lean over backwards and make excuses for behavior, or bad behavior, I should say, of the Muslim immigration that we're seeing today in Europe and even in the United States, what's happening there. It is deadly. Why are the liberals absorbing a culture into its belly that is anti-American, that is anti their value system, that wants to destroy their value system and replace it with their own? Why would someone or people do that? So we're talking about this topic, and Dr. Benedict Beckeld, I wanted to ask you, the academic world, which is supposed to be wise, is supposed to be educated, is supposed to have a history and a knowledge of world history, why would they be the ones specifically that are at the head of this type of movement and teaching this to their students and encouraging this political correctness, etc., and this oikophobia? Why would they be doing it? You would think maybe it would be maybe just dumb rich people that have a guilt complex because they were born with a silver spoon in their mouths. Why them?
That's a very interesting question. And there are many reasons why academics tend to be more prone to treason and subversive activity than many other elements of society. That started, it's, as I said before, it's been going on since ancient times, but probably the first time in which you see it very, very clearly is as France begins to decline, actually, around the time of Louis the 15th or so. But academics, there are a lot of complex answers to the question. But I mean, some of it is that academics are usually the ones who are are the first recipients of new ideas from abroad, that they then consider it to be their responsibility to filter down to the general population. And since they are more educated than others, they consider it sort of their responsibility to tell others what to do, as it were. And there is this sort of tendency that by dint of their education, they are better than the farmers and the laborers and so on, who sort of form the backbone of a particular civilization. And since they are exposed, since they consider themselves to be repositories, if you will, of all of the world's knowledge, the limits or the borders between various bodies of knowledge and between various civilizations become blurrier to them than they are to people with less education, which also you see today. I mean, academics tend to be sort of very jet-setting kind of people. They attend conferences all over the world and so on. And so what they owe to a particular civilization starts to sort of disappear in their minds. So that's one major reason. There are many others, but that certainly has been one of the most relevant factors, certainly for the United States today.
Let's look at the deadly factor. I mean, when you look at a disease, you look at the symptoms and you look at the danger of death. And I'm looking today at modern day feminism, because the feminists, you'll see them out there demonstrating with the PLO, with these pro-Muslim groups, which is basically anti-democracy, anti-Israel, anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic even. So you've got the modern day feminists who are marching. You've even got the LGBTQ, I hope I said that right, the homosexuals, the gays, marching against Israel for the PLO, for the Muslims, for Islam. And Islam is the first powerful culture on the planet today that would be throwing these people off of buildings if they're homosexuals, and or if they're women, enslaving them, using them as property, not giving them rights. And yet these people are marching, not just for them, but marching, physically marching for them. Can you explain that?
Well, they consider themselves to have the same enemies, essentially, as Islamic fundamentalists. I mean, I'm happy to say there are, just as we said before, there not all leftists succumb to orgophobia. There are definitely groups of both gay people and feminists who realize that this is a bit of a disconnect, and so and who do not subscribe or who do not defend those Islamic groups at all. But it's true. Yeah, there are many, of course, who do. And it's, as I said, it's because they consider themselves to have the same enemy, which is essentially the Western, quote unquote, patriarchy. The patriarchy, obviously, being a word that they throw around a lot. They have no idea what a patriarchy actually is. If they had lived in ancient Rome, they might have had a clue. But obviously, our society is nowhere near patriarchal in that sense. It's become a sort of vulgar catchword that they throw around. But they consider themselves to have the same enemy. And if foreign cultures are against the Western so-called patriarchy and against the Western leadership, then they will be in favor of those Islamic groups. Essentially, they have the fact that they often are not very well educated. They know the vices of the West, because they live in the West and they're aware of them. They do not know the vices of the civilizations that they support, which I also noticed, not just in reference to the Islamic world, but also with the various indigenous African cultures. You mentioned earlier that I had lived and worked in Namibia for a while, for example. And there is the sort of attitude that an indigenous African society, it can only be virtuous, and that it was only ruined once the European colonizers arrived there. And of course, that's very far from the truth. Every society will have its particular virtues and its particular vices, but it's much more tempting to embrace the virtues of a foreign society than it is to dig a little deeper and to also explore their vices, which can be very disillusioning.
But this doesn't seem to make sense, because we're not talking about uneducated people. We're talking about the academics. We're talking about people who do know history, who should know history. I don't have a PhD, but I know that women in Saudi Arabia are second or third class citizens. I know that in the Arab world, women are not treated and the same status as men, don't have the same rights as they do. I know that Islam does not tolerate homosexuality and throws them off of rooftops without a trial even. So how does this happen?
Yeah, I will give two answers to that. Number one, the simpler answer is that a lot of academics aren't actually as educated as you might think. This is certainly true of the sort of low-level academics, if I may say, like public school teachers and things like that. They are themselves the product of of the public education system in the United States, which is atrocious, I think I can say, in all fairness. And they really
Why? Yeah. Why do you think it's atrocious? I'm interested.
Oh, well, because they don't, they were victims of the, to the educational ideas of the early 70s and of the 90s, which is essentially the, which was the discarding of all rote learning, and essentially an emphasis only on creative thinking, which is certainly very important in education, but it should, a proper education should be a combination of both, of more creative and experimental learning on the one hand, and also more rote learning on the other hand. Whereas they completely have discarded the latter in favor of the former, which means that they simply do not have the grasp of, well, since we're talking about culture here, they do not have the grasp of where our Western civilization came from. They know nothing about history. They know nothing about ancient civilizations and how those ancient civilizations feed into what we are today. They know very, very little about that. Hmm. So that's one part of the answer. The other answer is that they use their education. Because of their education, they know a lot more about American vices or about Western vices than the average person does. So they do know all of the horrible little things that America or the West as a whole have committed. And since knowing about those things and thereby being able to lecture to less educated people about everything that we have done wrong, which obviously feeds into their own vanity, they're able to elevate themselves by denigrating the rest of their civilization. And so emphasizing one's own or one's own culture's vices is very tempting because obviously it makes you stand apart from those vices and to elevate yourself above them.
Okay, let me ask you one more question because we only have another minute for this segment. You would think that feminists would know about women in other countries and be fighting for them, at least be aware if they're not fighting for them. And the same thing with the LGBTQ, very aware of which countries are tolerant and which countries are not tolerant, and the ones that aren't tolerant, how they treat them. And yet they are again marching with these anti-democratic, anti-freedom type people. Explain.
Yeah, I mean, some of it goes back to the narcissism of small differences that I mentioned before. It's easier to distance yourself from that which is close by, in a certain sense. But it's also, it could be a certain subconscious sense of hopelessness in terms of what happens very far away. It's extremely difficult for anyone to feel that they can influence what happens to women or to gay people in Iran or what have you. Whereas here, one feels that one can make a difference. And so it is here that one marches. And they also know that people here will see them when they march. In other countries, I don't think they really care what feminists here do. And so that, again, is going to make it much more tempting to march for those Islam for those foreign groups and to protest against the threat or the perceived threat here at home.
All right, so we're going to a break now, but when we get back, we're going to talk about Europe. But if you have any comments or questions, you can call into the show now and ask them. Brexit, what happened there? There are countries in the EU that are not happy about the free immigration policy, the opening of borders, and they want to leave. The UK voted on it. What's happening there? Will we see the protection of Western Judeo-Christian values in Europe or not? We'll be right back.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
All right, we are back here at Israel News Talk Radio, and you're listening to the Tamar Yonah Show. We're talking about something called oikophobia, and that is self-hatred of one's society, of one's culture. And that's what we're seeing today, sadly, in the more liberal, progressive world. Why are people marching with anti-democratic regimes, ideologies, minorities, people, etc.? Our lines are open now. If you tried to get in before, you can try again now. Our phone numbers are on our homepage at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. You can call in. And we're speaking with Dr. Benedict Beckeld. He is the author of the book, Oikophobia, Hatred of Home in the Decline of Civilizations. And in the last segment, we were saying that we're going to talk a little bit about Europe, because Europe seems to be in the throes of oikophobia. They have opened up their borders. They have let in millions of immigrants from Islamic societies that do not want to assimilate, do not share the value system of the countries there, and want to radically change it, and are succeeding in many cases. So what's with that? We had Britain vote for Brexit, and they are still in the EU. There are other countries who are unhappy. What is the solution there for to keep Europe alive?
Yeah, I think probably, as sad as it sounds to say so, for a couple of countries in Western Europe, it might actually have, I think probably they've already passed the point of no return. I think that's true of France. Might be true of Belgium and Holland as well, possibly Sweden. But in any case, I mean, hopefully I'm wrong about that. But if I am, what would be required is essentially to halt immigration from those countries, not to halt immigration of any kind. People always say that one is anti-immigrant if one says that. I mean, as I'm an immigrant to the United States myself. So one can certainly be pro-immigration in general and still understand that, well, there should be some kind of system based on certain preferences. And obviously taking in millions and millions of people, especially when one's own birth rate is quite low, millions of people who essentially despise one's own civilization. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that that's going to unstabilize a country after a certain point. So I think certainly that's one thing that has to be done. Immigration has to be reduced from certain parts of the world. And second of all, education, and that's a much more long-term project, but education, public education in a lot of these countries has to be emphasized, has to be directed more not toward nationalism, but at least toward a knowledge of what one's own culture has accomplished. I know in many countries in Europe, the people know nothing about their own literature, about the philosophers that their own countries have produced and so on. But they know about the Ramadan, or they know about a bunch of other things that may be important to know about, but that shouldn't be the first piece of knowledge anyway, or the earlier pieces of knowledge that a young child confronts in public school.
Okay, let's go to a caller. We have joining us Chris from the Occupied Territories of Chicago. Hi there, Chris. What's your comment or question for Dr. Beckeld?
Right, thank you for taking the call. Dr. Beckeld, I have a question. Historically, there's always something wrong with countries or cultures. And for instance, here in America, things have changed. Jim Crow laws were removed. They were bad. Now they're gone. And, you know, things evolve and slowly get taken care of. And what I'm getting at the end of this would be, what do you think the role of social media is in all this hatred? It seems so much more vitriol and really, really ready to kill each other on the air now. Is it the social media, in your opinion? Thank you.
Interesting question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly true, as I said before, that, or well, I didn't say so, but as you said, rather, things can improve, and we got rid of Jim Crow. That's certainly a good thing. I think that is, or at least should be, uncontroversial. The role of social media, I think, heightens and intensifies a process that would already have, that was already going on before, but social media certainly makes it worse. Social media, obviously, you're friends with a certain group of people. It leads to increases tribalism between the oikophobes and the anti-oikophobes. And they start hating each other even more because they filter out everything that doesn't agree with their own point of view. But social media also contributes to the illusion of knowledge because it helps bring everything closer to one's own fingertips. And people will read an article that somebody posts on some topic and immediately consider themselves an expert on that topic. And so it leads this sort of illusion of knowledge and the democratization, if you will, quote unquote, of knowledge leads a lot of people to consider themselves better than their peers. And that certainly contributes to oikophobia and to the and to the anti-civilizational tribalism that has developed more and more. So that tribalism one sees in declining, that neo-tribalism one sees in declining civilizations in general, but social media certainly has sped up that process, yeah.
Hmm. All right, let's go to another caller. We have Michael from Vancouver. Hi there, Michael. What's your comment or question for our guest?
Shalom, Tomar. My question is, we all know that the conspiracies against Jews is the same as when Goebbels and Hitler and everyone made the propaganda against Jews. It's the same thing from the Palestinians, but it seems that with all the internet conspiracies and all that kind of stuff that points the finger at Jews for everything from 9/11, dinosaur extinction, whatever, the banks, it's all us, right? So does the doctor think that the internet conspiracies have something to do with this rise in oikophobia, and why does it seem it's so socially acceptable when it's aimed at Israel and Jews, but we don't see this hyperized version of oikophobia against any other people?
Interesting question. So does oikophobia go along with anti-Semitism? I guess maybe he's asking something like that. Go.
Yep. No, that is an interesting question, and it does to some extent, yes. I mean, in earlier manifestations of oikophobia already, I mean, I mentioned France earlier, around the time of the French Enlightenment is the time when oikophobia starts to arise there, and that is to some extent also directed against the Jews. If you look at somebody like Voltaire, he flirts with Hinduism and to some extent with Islam, but he hates Christianity and Judaism, and you find as the British Empire was declining, like around the time of the Boer War, for example, around the year 1900, it was very common on the British left in those days to blame the war on the Jews and the capitalists, which were sort of synonymous in those days, just as they often tend to be considered to be synonymous today. And so that British oikophobia was also certainly had an anti-Semitic element. So that's also something that's that has repeated itself in history. So I don't think the sort of anti-Semitic traces one can find in some manifestations of oikophobia today, it's not a coincidence that something certainly that's happened in the past. Since Judaism is a founding pillar, Judaism and Christianity together with ancient Greece and Rome, those are the founding pillars of Western civilization. So it's normal that if you go against your own Western civilization, you would also try to question and criticize the Jewish pillar that upholds that civilization. And so Jews and Israel become an easy target there, yeah, definitely.
So conspiracies and the social network and making it acceptable, all this stuff, you want to make a last comment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those kinds of opinions spread much faster through social media, of course, and everybody... as I said before, one has one own little in-group, and there is no other... everybody used to read the same newspaper, essentially, but on something like Facebook, you can choose your own group, you can choose your own area of interest, and so any opposing voice is automatically filtered out, and that's... If you're already a bit oikophobic or slightly anti-Semitic, you're going to become more so through social media. Yeah.
Wow. So we have 1 minute left. So in 60 seconds, what is the cure for oikophobia?
The cure for oikophobia is I think, quite simply education. It's maybe a conventional answer, but I think it's conventional for a good reason. Societies have generally not been able to really pull back from oikophobia historically very well. So I can't say I'm terribly optimistic, but if we have a way out, it's education, finding out more about the pillars of Western civilization. I told a class once that I was teaching that human rights, the equality between men and women, it's a Western invention. It's a Western idea, and they were all shocked. Nobody knew that. And so learning about those things, I think, can certainly help us take a certain pride in our civilization.
Well, actually, I would bring that back to the Torah, talking about women's rights and human rights. The Torah right. guarantees the women a contract when they get married. They can't just be thrown out, etc. All right. Well, it's been very interesting. I really should have you back on again to explore more about this, because I think that we all see the world suffering from this, and we see the decline of Western democracies, the countries that value freedom more, with their self-loathing. And this is such a sad and dangerous thing. So we really have to keep our finger on the pulse of this. I want to thank you very much for coming on, Dr. Benedict Beckeld. If anybody wants to follow him, they can go to his website at benedictbeckeld.com. We will link to his website there, so you can just easily click and get there. And one last word, doctor?
No, thank you very much for having me. It's been a stimulating conversation.
All right, very good. So thank you for coming on the show. And to all of our listeners, if you have any comments or questions, you can post them on the page where the show is podcasted. Share it widely. It's something that can help protect your freedoms, your society, to wake people up. I think people have never even heard of this before. Perhaps with this education from this show, it could help even just a bit. You've been listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. You can write me, Tamar, T-A-M-A-R, at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Thanks, everybody, for being with us.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.